Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
When I was in college, I found myself Ubering to make money. This was in Southern California, and LA at the time was a constant flow of work. Occasionally, you'd pick people up in a nice area, and they'd tell you that they were sleeping with someone in a relationship, or that they themselves were cheating. This was depressingly common. I think that saying what they were doing to someone gave them this weird kind of relief. Once, I drove someone from Hollywood to Hemet. He was very charming and funny. When I dropped him off, it was a big blue building that they buzzed us into. The dude left me a $200 cash tip. I later found out this was what is known as gold base for the Church of Scientology. If you don't know what that is, it's a completely normal, not weird at all in any way location owned by the Church of Scientology. Feel free to Google it. A few months into my taxi career, insurance companies started using rideshare service, and some people who were more down on their luck would use it. Sometimes this was people just trying to get their kids to school, but sometimes it was much sadder. I can't tell you how many times I showed up to a doctor's office to see someone with accessibility limitations have their face drop at seeing my tiny car instead of a van like they needed. The clients that had substance problems were the types of interactions that would stay with you. Once I picked a man up going to a dental appointment. And I drove him for about half an hour. He told me about how he used to run drugs in the 90s, until they caught him with a few pounds of coke. He told me about when he was moved from Nevada to Florida for trial. How he traveled handcuffed in a van. How the cops would stop only once a day at McDonald's for their $1 menu item of the day. He asked me to stop at a liquor store, and he chugged a tiny bottle of booze, shoved some mints into his mouth, then sipped on a soda. This guy smelled like pure alcohol when I dropped him off at his dentist. Near my house, there was a methadone clinic. I would get up before dawn to be able to take those rides. Early bird gets the worm, right? Almost always, they were sweet and thankful people. Sometimes they were a little bit out of it, but I never felt like I was in any danger or anything like that. Just good people going through tough times. These rides were the most consistently depressing. People who were going to court clearly drunk or high. Older women who had trouble requesting a ride and had been waiting in the parking lot of their dialysis place into the night. They tell their stories sometimes. A person who was going to court for a child custody case. People struggling with mental illness. Some mornings were downright exhausting. Being up that early, you'd hit another crowd that I had never anticipated. Funeral goers. The saddest funeral ride was when a man and a woman got into my back seat. Rather than speaking to me, the man handed me a neon printout of a map of a cemetery with printed instructions on it saying what plot to go to. There was a written message on it that said, "Hello, I'm attending my father's funeral. My wife and I are deaf. Please follow these directions." The whole ride, I could hear them signing to one another and trying their best not to cry. There were also the retired gamblers. They'd leave their houses at 7 in the morning, take a $70 Uber out to the desert, and spend the whole day gambling at the reservation casinos. The desert is where I saw truly the weirdest things. The desert was the only place I had ever felt scared driving. It was in Temecula, the wine country of Southern California. Lots of wooded roads and desert. One day, I happened to pick up a lady just off the freeway at what I initially assumed was the edge of a golf resort, but it was actually an unpaved access road. It was late, and that area was especially dark. I was just getting ready to call the passenger when I saw them coming down the unpaved access road. It was a tall blonde woman in a very nice pantsuit. She was absurdly put together, considering she had walked God knows how long in heels down a dirt rock road. She got into the car, and she was very pleasant. She said she lived in a gated community that was hard to get Ubers to, and it was just easier to send me to the access road. I thought it was weird, but I didn't want to be creepy asking about where she lived exactly. She was friendly, chatty even. She said she was going to a dinner party, and as she spoke to me, I could feel her looking at me in the rearview mirror the entire ride. We drove a half hour away from the freeway, to one of those rural, chic neighborhoods that you would hear celebrities had huge parties in. Eventually, we reached the address, which was a paved road lined with trees. She told me to keep driving, and I didn't think much of it because, again, we were in a mansion-style neighborhood. We hit a white ranch-style fence after a minute or so going down the road. That was when I started to feel just a tad bit uneasy. There were around a dozen or so no trespassing signs, and one of those classic, forget the dog, beware of the owner signs, with a guy pointing a pistol at you. I thought it was more than a little blunt to have that many signs, but hey, it's not my property. We drove for about a minute when we came to another fence. It was at the top of a hill, and it overlooked a barn with some lights off in the distance. I know this sounds weird, but it was unpleasant. I couldn't put my finger on it. It was just a barn with what looked like a barbecue going on. But being out in the woods without any light definitely had me freaked out. The passenger told me that I could just slide the gate open. As I approached the fence, I saw some signs that made me stop cold. Off to the side of the gate, not quite in the dark, but on the fringes of where my headlights would reach, there were metal signs with bullet holes through them, swastikas, and Confederate flags brightly displayed. Now, Southern California has a lot of white supremacist pockets. I had dropped off dozens of passengers in cities like Norco and driven down streets with people drinking in the garage, and a Nazi flag proudly hung behind them. It wasn't my favorite, but I wasn't spending any time in those neighborhoods more than I needed to. This, however, was different. It was after 11 p.m. at night, and I had no idea where I was. I opened the gate, and down the road, I saw what I assumed were cell phone flashlights lighting up and coming up the incline. This made me very uncomfortable. I went back, and I told the woman that I didn't think my car would make it back up the hill if I went down it. "What are you talking about? Just take me. It's right there," is what she said. She kept getting more heated, and I could see the lights slowly making their way up the hill. She kept telling me that I needed to cancel the ride, and that she wouldn't pay to not be taken the entire way. I told her the pin I was supposed to take her to was a mile back up the road, but I was so nervous that I relented and canceled on my end. She slammed my back door as she got out. I took off before I could see the cell phone light people get any closer. The road back was much rougher at the speed that I was going at. I felt a bump that felt like I hit a body, but I just kept going. My car was driving like shit, but I kept driving till I was well past the fence, out of the rich neighborhood, when I stopped at a gas station. My right rear tire was all the way fucked up, and I needed to change it. There were a few nails that looked as if they'd been attached to a piece of wood, now firmly implanted on my tire. I was freaked out so hard in that moment, and sometimes I wish I had called the cops and reported it all. But of course, All that happened was I got a flat on a back road, and I didn't want to spend the rest of my night waiting on a cop car. I know it's far more likely that I freaked myself out than a bunch of Nazis planning to mess with some random Uber driver. But when I picked up a well-dressed businesswoman from a remote location, only to drop her off at a separate remote location, that gave me chills. Chills that I have trouble explaining even to this day. I recently found this sub, and reading through some of the stories here has brought back several unsettling memories from my own childhood. Figured I'd take a minute to share one of these instances with you all. I grew up in a major but relatively small U.S. city. We lived in a neighborhood that bordered one of the most exclusive neighborhoods in our town. It was an extremely safe neighborhood, but it was still a city, so crime existed. I was taught young about street smarts and stranger danger, and thank the Lord I was, because
we took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga, Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
On this particular day, it saved me and some of my best friends. The day of the encounter was a surprisingly warm, sunny summer day. My best friend lived a few houses down from me and essentially lived at my house most of our childhood. He was over from sunup to sundown. We had another good friend with us that day and were trying to decide what kind of trouble the three of us were going to get into. My family had the largest backyard in the neighborhood, so that was often ground zero for our shenanigans. But on this particular day, we decided to play out in front. If memory serves correctly, we had intended to do something involving our skateboards and water balloons. So there we were, filling up our water balloons at the spigot next to the garage, which was entirely visible from the street, when a white van with no windows pulls up. I know, doesn't get any more stereotypical than that. There was a very large man with a scraggly beard in the front, with trash piled up on the dash and passenger seat. Instantly, all three of us kids freeze, and I distinctly remember the feeling of a chill running up my spine. Something immediately felt wrong. This man then yells out to us, "You kids know what time it is?" We all kind of looked at each other for a few seconds before my best friend was able to stammer out the time in a very soft, intimidated kind of way. The man's response was, "What? I can't hear you. Why don't you come closer so I can hear you?" With that comment, my friend instantly tensed up, and he looked over at me, and I could see the fear in his face. Thankfully, we all had better sense than to walk up to this strange man's vehicle. That's when my buddy repeated the time at a volume that everyone on the block would be able to hear. In retrospect, I think that he may have been trying to yell loudly enough that my mom, who was in the backyard, might have heard us. After this exclamation, the man seemed slightly disappointed, probably because we didn't approach, and there was no denying that he heard that time. That's when he proceeds to offer us a laptop with absolutely no prompt or context. Just, "You kids want a laptop?" We all seemed to respond in unison, "No." The man in the van continues, "You sure? Because I've got a brand new Dell laptop for you." At this point, we all knew something was very off and decided to go play inside. As we head towards the door, he called out from behind us, "Where are y'all going? I thought we were talking. Don't leave." We went up to my room to play, and my room had a window which looked out onto the street. And for the next 30 minutes or so, that man just circled the block. It didn't seem like he stopped to talk to anybody else or harass any other kids out in their yards. but the fact that he stayed out in our neighborhood definitely gave me goosebumps as a kid. Man in the creepy pedo van with all the free laptops, may we never meet. At the time, we all shrugged the event off pretty quickly and didn't talk about it for years. We all still remember it like yesterday, and it affects us much more these days than it did back then. Thankfully, we had the whole stranger danger sense, and we're all safe. The worst part is that I grew up right across the street from an elementary school, and I sometimes find myself wondering if that's the reason he was on the block in the first place. Years ago, I lived in a condo with my two dogs, Smokey and the Bandit, brother and sister from the same litter that I got as puppies. For reference, their mother was a Sheltie, Smokey's father was a German Shepherd, and Bandit's was a Husky. They were both a good size, with long, thick coats, which made them look a lot bigger than they actually were. Personality-wise, they were both huge babies who loved people and would happily lick you to death, given the chance. One night, I got home late, like 2:30-ish, and took them out for a run and a pee, something that I had done many times. I lived on the backside of a condo, on the ground level, and the backyard was a huge park-like setting divided up by intersecting pathways, kind of like a square with four quadrants, surrounded by other condos and houses. The area right in front of my condo was a big field with a pathway about halfway through, running parallel to the condo. To the left was an area around the same size, divided up between a large playground area and a forested area with a pathway running through it. I headed straight out of my condo and across the pathway that divides it into the big, open field. I had noticed someone, a tall, skinny man, dressed all in black, whistling while walking along the path that I had crossed over. As I ran with the dogs, I noticed that the whistling stopped, so I looked over my shoulder and saw the man had diverted off the path and was now walking in a direct line towards me. I immediately thought, oh, this can't be good. I took a hard left and ran into the playground area. It was well lit, but there was also a huge man-made hill that I assume was leftover dirt from when something was built that had become grass-covered. I ran around the hill into the dark, where that man wouldn't be able to see me. I stayed there for a minute to formulate my, oh my god, what the f*** plan. Luckily, I knew the area very well, having spent hours walking everywhere with the dogs. The playground was bordered on one side by the forested area, so I crept through the trees to where the path ran through, circling back towards my condo, keeping close to the shadowed area while hoping and praying that I had lost him or he had lost interest. The forested area ends basically where the backyard of my condo begins. Still hidden, I looked around the open area ahead, and I couldn't see anyone. I made a break for it and started running like hell. Up to this point, it was just like any other walk for my dogs who had happily galloped alongside me the entire time, blissfully unaware of any danger. As I left the protection of the forest, I saw the f***er jump out of a nearby group of bushes. I had a good head start on him, but I didn't know how fast the f***er was, so I just kept running, trying my best not to look back. What happened next still amazes me to this day. As I was running, the dog still at my side, Smokey, the female, all of a sudden stopped dead in her tracks. She turned around and assumed that "don't f*** with me, boy" stance, started snarling and growling at the guy, which stopped him dead in his tracks too. Bandit, the male, stuck right by my side like glue until we landed on my patio. I turned and looked back and almost laughed at the f***er. Smokey was still standing her ground in full-on guard dog mode, and he was standing there looking at her, hands up, completely in the surrender position. I called Smokey to come, and she backed away slowly, barking and still growling, until she decided it was good, then turned around and ran right back to me. I kept my eyes on the guy the entire time. He didn't move a muscle until the dogs and I went back inside, which we did as soon as Smokey got there. I immediately called 911, and within minutes, the entire backyard area was swarming with cops. The cop who interviewed me said there had been numerous reports of SAs in our area, and they figured that it was likely the same guy. Unfortunately, other than tall, skinny, and wearing black, I had zero info on what he looked like. I don't know if they ever caught him or anything more about it. Once everyone was gone, I had a good, long cuddle with my wonder dogs, complete with them licking away my tears. After the adrenaline and everything wore off, the gravity of what could have happened and how damn lucky I was finally hit me. For the record, I had done lots of different modes of training with them, but never anything that involved protection. What they did was 100% instinct that I didn't even know they had in them. My two protectors, and overall, my two very good dogs.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.